you know, I'm here to talk to you about an important family issue today, and I want to thank my friends, my fellow storytellers for sharing some heartfelt stories, and I'm going to do a little bit of that. Just a show of hands here, people who are familiar with vomiting children. Okay, this is an area of expertise of mine. I have four kids, and two of them are prodigious vomiters, and especially when we're in the car, we call it the vomitorium. We live about a mile from here, and we go often to Philadelphia, where my wife's family lives, and we'll all get in the car, and about, you know, 2 minutes down the road, one of my kids will say, "Hey, look, it's the Towson Library." And then the other kid will just start throwing up in the back seat. And that's how we roll. So I'm curious, for people here, how many people here have experienced the curse? And what I mean by that is that moment in childhood where one of your parents, in this case my mother, kind of, if you're, I don't know, misbehaving, being lazy, being all around no good, they look at you and they say, "I hope you have kids just like you someday." For me, or for my children, it's more of a mosaic, right? Like, there's not one that's exactly like me. They all kind of have inherited parts of that curse, you know, that I've passed on. And car sickness is really one of them. I was the kid in the family who, on family trips, if it was 2 miles, 10 miles, 20 miles, 100 miles, my brother and sister would fight over who had to sit next to me in the car. And so my bile filled the back seat of our family vehicle. And, you know, my mother didn't put that curse on me while I was getting sick, in her defense, you know. Anyhow, a different question, maybe a weird follow-up. Are there any Polish Americans here tonight? All right. I know you, and I love you. I'm not one of you, but I am married to one of you. And you know, I'm married to a Pole, and I've spent the last 20 years in Polish-American boot camp, so I know the Bachis and the Chuchis and the Kruszczykis and the Golumki and all of that. And it's a wonderful way of life. My wife's Polish ancestors, her grandparents came over from Poland and settled in Philadelphia in a row home. And their house, this was a little bit after World War I, their family kind of, that became the place that friends and relatives who came from Poland stayed there for a little while. They got themselves settled, and then they'd move on to, you know, to wherever it was that they lived. Now, everybody who kind of passed through that house became this big, sprawling, beautiful, tight family, right? And it's I'm assuming that's a Polish thing, is that tightness, right? Like, people want to be together. Right? Like, we're going on vacation and we're all going together. And that's, again, that's how we roll. So, all right. Now, it's not every day in America that, a white male Irish Catholic seems exotic. But when I arrived on the scene, it was sort of like, that part of a Western where the saloon doors open and the piano stops, right? Monica, my loving wife, was the first of her siblings to get married, right? So I was the new guy. And our first married Christmas in Philadelphia, there, I hear some knowing chuckles. So our first married Christmas in Philadelphia, I was the new guy, right? And everybody was having to adjust to the new guy. And somebody, you know, there's kind of two parts of the family, right? There's the family, the big chunk that lives in Philly, and then there's the big chunk that lives in Trenton, New Jersey. And so this Christmas, you know, somebody had said, "Hey, let's all get together and let's get a post-Christmas buffet somewhere," right? So now, if somebody said to you, anyone in the room, like, can you name a good place for breakfast within an hour of Philadelphia? Just a show of hands, how many people would naturally say the Trenton Airport? Right? So that was a bad idea coming down the pike. So, you know, I got over my car sickness roughly around the time that I was 20, I think. I guess that's when you stop seeing a pediatrician, right? That was kind of, you know, it for me. So, but like any childhood trauma, these things kind of periodically, like, creep back into your life, right? They're like, hello, I'm still in here, right? So, anyhow, so I get in my father-in-law's car in Philadelphia. I'm like an oversized man-child in the back seat. And we start driving to Trenton. And there's my old childhood affliction. It's starting to creep up in my belly. And I get that pre-vomit tingle, which is followed by the pre-vomit sweat, right? And so by the time we've pulled into the parking lot of the General's Quarters, perhaps you've heard of that restaurant, I was a wreck, and through some act of God, I hadn't gotten sick, right? So we walk into the General's Quarters. It's a buffet breakfast, and I don't know about you, but when I don't feel good, the sight and smell and kind of quivering texture of big pans of scrambled eggs is not my thing, right? I just, So I do what anybody would do, and I make a beeline for the chocolate cake and the bacon, right? And so, you know, the family, extended family, is feasting on all the eggs, and I've got my bacon and I've got my cake. And I eat it, and it settles my stomach, because that's what happens, right? So we talk about the Eagles. We talk about, you know, traffic. We all have a good time, get back in the car, drive back to Philadelphia. So we're there for a couple hours, no problems driving home. I'm not sick anymore. And I don't know, after about a couple hours, we're sitting there together, because that's what you do. And my brother-in-law, John, runs down the hall, and I want to emphasize the word runs there. Now, there's a metrics system for bathroom going, right? So, like, we all know this, right? Like, in polite company, there's number one and number two, right? Now, there's a dark side to the metric system, which is that there are numbers after one and two. And so I love my brother-in-law, John. He's well known in the family for a weak stomach. And what I mean is he's familiar with number three. And so he's in the bathroom, and my wife is on the other side of the door asking if he's okay. And by this point, he's feeling number three and number four. And pretty soon, my wife is as well, and then my mother-in-law. And so, my mother-in-law and my wife are very selfless, empathetic people. And so, you know, my brothers-in-law and my father-in-law were like, well, maybe it's sympathy sickness. Like, maybe they just feel badly for Johnny. And, like, well, then my father-in-law goes down, and then my brother-in-law Frank goes down. And so, by New Year's Eve morning, it's me and Joe, right? We're the only ones left standing. And at this point, you know, new guy here, right? Like, I'm running out to, I'm like showing my worth, right? Like, as the new guy, I'm buying toilet paper, I'm buying Pedialyte, right? I'm making sure everybody's hydrated. And I realize I haven't seen Joe in a little bit. And at this point, Monica's feeling a little bit better, and she's like, hey, where's Joe? He's like, I don't know. I haven't seen that guy in a while. So she runs upstairs, and there he is. He's a big man. You know, the kind of brother-in-law that men of my size tend to quake when they see a person of this size. And there, so Monica finds Joe, and he's fully naked on the floor of the bathroom, begging God for mercy. And so a little while later, after proving my value while also kind of worrying that the family thinks I've poisoned them, the phone rings, and it's the Trenton relatives, right? And they're like, hey, how you guys feeling over there? And it turns out 39 out of 40 of us got food poisoning. And I was the only one who didn't. And that is the miracle of that particular Christmas, which, for those of you who need a takeaway message, is that when in doubt, stick with bacon and chocolate cake, and you are good to go.